Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host, David Shee, and with me today is Jazz Stana. Jazz, how is Melbourne doing today?
Melbourne is really good, David. Actually, we've got pretty good weather today. It's nice and sunny outside. Had a couple of bad days, rain, storm and all that, but now it's getting better, which is awesome. But
it has been a couple of windy days here in Sydney, so that's why I thought I'll ask.
It wasn't dusty, but it's been pretty windy for the last few days. What's happening in the world of Sydney, mate, the finance capital?
Mate, it's busy as always. Let's put it that way. You know, we're still chugging along. It's a very busy city. People's got busy lifestyles, and you know, we're always on the road. So you know, I think it's probably one of the busiest city in Australia. And we're trying to catch up with the other Asian cities as well. So Melbourne's not far behind, though, I'm pretty sure.
It's a little bit more laid back compared to Sydney, but then you compare it to Adelaide, it's pretty fast.
Yeah, it's all comparative, isn't it? Comparative. If you compare Sydney to the kind of Adelaide or the Brisbane type, then you feel a huge difference. But at the same time, if you compare that to the likes of Hong Kong, for example, then it's a completely different level, mate. Remember last time when I went back to Taiwan and went back to Taipei, it was crazily crammed and busy as hell, and I felt like Australia is like in heaven.
To some extent, it is. After traveling those many countries, I can promise that statement definitely has got a lot of weight. I was actually checking the auction clearance rates over the weekend. They jumped up again. They're sitting in 70s now, which is pretty good for Sydney. So.
Oh yeah, Sydney's going to high 70s as well, and I think that's just mainly because at the moment there's not much stock. Melbourne, are there a lot of stock? Because in general, I think if I look at the clearance rates, the total number of sampling properties is quite low, probably more in the 200s, 300, or even just 400. I think mainly in the 300s. So the numbers could.
Yeah, that's definitely the case for Melbourne as well, man. The stock is relatively less. But do you think that one of the reasons for that could be is because a lot of people who bought at their peak or in the last 2 years, they obviously won't be able to recover their money for those reasons, basically?
I think there's definitely a merit in terms of that. And obviously with low interest rates as well, it's easier for them to hold at this point in time. So if there's no rush to sell. Winter is also a quiet season as well. So, you know, that's, I think we'll just have to sit back and observe whether spring is going to have a lot more stock that's available on the market, and then see how auction clearance rate plays from there.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a couple of things. Obviously, rate cuts, that's a positive thing. Well, depends how you look at it. And then the auction clearance rate, that's a tick as well. Property prices for the month of August, I think that was the first month where we see an uptick or a rise in the price, which was only 0.1% or something, not much.
Yeah. I think that's around the same for July as well, according, I think, from CoreLogic, isn't it?
So that's looking positive too. But there's still a talk of another rate cut in November around the Melbourne Cup, which makes you think the data, when you look at the real estate data, that's looking positive. And then there's a talk about the rate cut, which means the economy is not looking that great. That's why they're planning another rate cut. So interesting. We'll watch the space to see what happens.
That's right. I think, it's as we all said before, and we all agreed that it's a double-edged sword. You know, every time when they do another rate cut, then it's another bullet less that RBA could fire. So it makes, you know, whilst the low interest rate environment is great for us investors to be able to hold on to the properties, but at the same time, you know, the economy forecast is getting a bit more grey, which... know about you, Jazz, but it's probably a bit more grey than my liking. That's
definitely. I mean, rate cut is a good thing for investors, but in the if you look at the holistic picture, that tells you that there's something not right with the economy in general. So we'll keep watching the space and keep bringing to our listeners of what's happening. It's a little bit early to say, so we still got 2 or 3 months. Rate cuts normally take few months to filter into the economy, so we got to give it a couple of months before getting a bit more clear picture of what's going on.
I reckon we could probably bring one of the economists on, given that you've got a bit of economy background. So you guys can battle it out and then see what happens in 6 to 2 years' time to see where it's going to lead us in the Australian economy.
What's the topic for the day, mate? What are we discussing today?
Yeah, look, I thought, we could talk about whether... and this is sparked by, you know, when I went back to Taiwan as well, look at all these high rises. Is high rises actually a good investment? I think that could be something that we talk about today.
That's actually a very interesting and a very debatable topic. Can they really be part of your portfolio, or it's outright a bad investment? What are your thoughts, David, on this actually?
Look, I think given my own story, and my first one wasn't a high rise, but I didn't have that great experience with off the plans, and to a degree, I think my one's more classified as a medium rise. I prefer to steer away from them personally, but at the same time, you know, obviously for diversification purposes, let's say, for example, when we talk about diversification, it's probably, you know, I'm thinking more like, you know, if you own houses, you can diversify with townhouses, you can diversify with apartments as well. So from diversification purposes, you can definitely consider having an apartment, but whether high density apartment is the one to go or not is a separate question.
Sorry.
Yeah. So the, you know, like in the sense, and I'm sure, you know, Jas, you can add in a lot more here as well. In the sense, if I want to diversify from security perspective, I wouldn't look at high density. I would look at low rises, like we always advocate for. Low rise, you know, the type of walk-up units with no gym, no pool, no lift, nothing fancy, low strata, that kind of stuff. Less headache and smaller complex.
Yeah. Just with the high rises in general, what if we think about what some of the pros and cons are of the high rises, right? One of the positives in some of the cases that high rises can give you, and it helps to be sustain the portfolio, is the rent yield, that they can sometimes have good, not always, but sometimes they can have good rent yields. And the reason, and the main reason for that is that generally high rises don't see that much capital growth. If we look back at the history and compare it to some of the other investments like houses and the townhouses, or more investments where there's only a handful in the block, 6 to 7, if you compare those with the high rises, normally you'll find, is looking at the data, that the capital growth is actually not that great on the high rises. But the question is, why though? Why is there not that much capital growth in the high rises compared to a normal investment property?
I think it's really more about like a supply demand perspective, just because of the fact that these high rises, when we're talking about them, you're looking at something like a 300 to even 500 massive complexes, and a lot of them were developed fairly similar in terms of structure, fairly similar in design, and as such, you know, you can imagine them, they all kind of made out the same mold. So if you think of it that way, then you know there is really nothing that's unique and nothing that's distinctive for the unit for itself to stand out, and they can build as many as they want, you know, because all you can do is just keep going higher to live towards the sky. There is no limit in terms of how many you can build. So from supply perspective, that's kind of like limitless to a degree. So, you know, in comparison with houses and probably to an extent townhouses, where there's not that many, so, you know, they're more distinct, they're more unique in their own, and as such, you know, people would probably prefer to pay a little bit more for that unique, for that distinctiveness.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. It's purely a supply and demand thing here, right? Mm-hmm. There's no limit to the supply because it's a high rise. You can keep adding on the levels. And the other thing with the high rise apartments is because there's so many of them, that if there is any distressed sale, or if any of those apartments sell for a lesser price compared to what you bought it for, or in general what the market price is, then that forms the base for the for the next sales that happens within that apartment or within a few kilometers radius kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which can lead to a lot of problem to some extent, that you're competing against those many people and there's no limit to the supply. On the other hand, they two together are already pretty big negative points, in my opinion.
And the same thing with rental yield as well, as what you pointed out, just because, you know, as I said, a lot of these designs are very, very similar. So in a big complexes, if you think of it like the current Sydney market, there's been a lot of rental vacancies. And, you know, for one of these big complexes, it could be easily, I don't know, 50 or even something similar to that kind of number of units that's available for rent. And that gives a lot of renters to be able to choose from. Which means, you know, for landlord to be able to rent them out, they will have to look at discounting their rent. And that then has a domino effect, because as soon as one starts discounting, then the other one may have to look at follow it in. And the rental return can drop fairly quickly from that point onwards. And, you know, from renter perspective, it's great because, hey, I get to choose all these different type of units and then I get to choose them carefully because I got so many to choose from. But from landlord perspective, and we're standing from landlord's perspective, it's not fantastic because, hey, this week you might have to drop $10 and you only get two interest coming through, but they didn't put through an application because someone else has dropped their rent even further. And the next week onwards, the PM's told you, you might have to look at dropping it again because everyone else has dropped another $5 or $10. So, you know, it's like an ongoing domino effect. And that's one of the key risk that you'll have to evaluate. You know, especially with these big complexes, most of them were bought by investors too. So, you know, in a sense, it's like a small investor community. So if everyone is struggling to rent out, everyone is struggling to rent out.
It's really the domino effect in both in terms of the supply side, because there's no limit to the supply, which affects the capital growth, and then the rent yield. If there's too many of them, or if there's a building being there's a new building, a high-rise building being built next door, or within the radius vicinity, then that's going to affect your yields once again and the price, because it's going to be a newer building. It will have its own a new lift, pool, gym, some of the fancy stuff in there, and that's going to end up affecting the price of your apartment to some extent.
Exactly.
So it's really, this is something really for the investors who are thinking about buying a apartment in a high rise. This should be really well thought of. Unless if it really needs to be added to your portfolio, then yes, makes sense. But there should be some good reasoning, rational behind it, of why you are buying in a high rise when the history normally suggests that the growth is not that great, and there's no limit to the supply, and it can affect your rent yields and whatnot in that case. Also, the other thing is all the fees that being a part of a high rise, normally there's extra fee, which is a part of the strata sinking fund that gets added as well, which does affect your net yield. And that could be for if the building has got a gym in it, the building has got a swimming pool in it, a tennis court. All those things are great. Yep, everyone wants them. For the people who are living there, yes, they are enjoying their life. But as an investor, you end up paying for all those extra facilities that are being provided as a part of the strata, and that can really affect your yield and, to some extent, capital growth as well. Because if there's new fancy stuff out there, then the next door building, which is going to be a new high rise, will have all that stuff and better. And that will actually end up affecting your rent yield and the capital growth at the same time.
Everyone wants them, except no one wants to pay for them. That's probably the best description. Someone's going to have to pay for it.
and there's a good reason why most of these high rises are people living in them are actually renters, not investors, because they are enjoying the lifestyle of the building. And as soon as the building gets old, or if the investor or if the if the community is not maintaining the building well, they'll just move out and go into the new building that has been recently built within the area and start paying a similar kind of rent, essentially. So
exactly. Same rent, you know, newer building, why not, right?
Exactly. And the other and the other main thing is it also comes down to with the high rises, you can only control your own apartment and you can really look after it. It can be probably the best apartment in the building itself, but you cannot control how the building otherwise is being maintained, whether all the facilities that are being provided are being looked after. And if they are not, then that will affect your price again, essentially, when you're trying to sell. So it really needs to be thought of before buying a high-rise apartment. There's definitely, in my portfolio, I can tell you, I don't hold any of the high-rises. And I think most of the good investors will probably agree to that part of it, that high-rises don't really make sense. Yes, once your portfolio gets to a certain point where you're really looking after a yield, but even then you can sort of argue, might as well go into the commercial and buy a commercial property, which is going to give you a much better yield than compared to buying a high-rise, which probably can give you some yield, but it's not going to have any capital growth, essentially.
Yeah. Look, you know, definitely, there's definitely merits in that, and that's for sure. But yeah, without considering the, you know, I mean, you can't compare high-density residential with commercial. I think they're totally two different things to a degree, and depends on, you know, what the risk of the actual investor is to that degree. But you know, I can see your point, and I can see why. Yeah, you know, looking at what they're trying to achieve in that sense. But one thing that I thought, and this is just my pure personal opinion as well, in terms of why most of these high density were bought by investors is because they're not really designed to suit the current Australian lifestyle. You know, I personally think, and this is just from Sydney perspective, a lot of these high rise complexes were being built to maximize the profit for developers rather than being carefully thought and considered in terms of suiting the Australian family lifestyle.
Yeah.
So most of them, you know, when I say maximizing profit, most of them are probably designed to be two bedrooms and one bedrooms, or even studios to that degree, because they can squeeze in as many of them as possible in limited lot space they can do. And that's why we're seeing about 300 or 400s. And I would say probably what 70, 80, or even 90% of them are looking at one bedroom or two bedrooms. Very little of them are three bedrooms. And, you know, the way I see it is Australians' population gets older, more people age, you know, and we're living longer as well. People will want to downsize. And when they want to downsize, at the moment, there isn't that many options for them to be able to downsize to. Because if you think about it, you know, like from downsizing perspective, if I'm getting old today, I probably want to move into a unit with, you know, there's not a lot of garden that I need to be able to do, not a lot of backyard work. So units would be a fantastic option. But at the same time, you know, if I'm downsizing from a house to a unit or to an apartment, I'm hoping I will still be able to get like a three bedroom type of apartment. And I don't see that very often in Sydney or in the current Sydney scheme. I don't know about Melbourne, mate.
It's the exact same thing. Generally, with the apartments, they are built in a way where it's for small families or more for couples. But just to touch on the point that you said before, it's residential is completely different from commercial, but it's purely, if you're purely looking from a yield perspective, just purely from a yield perspective, and you care less about the capital growth, which you will normally not find in the high rises, then you're better off looking at the commercial side. But otherwise, yes, they're completely different beast altogether. Definitely do agree on that. Normally, as a blanket approach, this is just a blanket approach, I'll say is it doesn't really add up well in the investor portfolio.
Yeah, not... I mean, obviously it's very specific, but no, in generalization, no, it's a lot, you know, you have a lot more cost to hold it from strata maintenance perspective. You've got a lot less say about your complex because you only own one seat out of the whole thing, so you only got one boat where there could be hundreds of other boats in order to get something done. And as you said, you know, there's no unique factor out of it. So unfortunately most people do get sold of that, especially the you know, the first time investors when they're looking at those glossy brochures and thinking, and obviously, you know, the salespersons would be saying how great the rental yield is after it's been rented out. Look, it's all brand new, just get a feel of what the demo house is looking like, and you know, the quality of the taps and all that stuff, which is not really important in the grand scheme of things. And you know, also the depreciation from tax perspective. A lot of people are thinking about high density or high rises because, one, they're fairly new, so they've got really good depreciation to be able to save tax. And I think that's a couple of reasons why some people were being lured into buying higher density investments. But from a longer term perspective, I don't quite necessarily agree that it's going to be the best investment.
Surely, completely agree on that. Really, the only one upside that I could think of, which we've already mentioned, is maybe you'll end up getting a good rent yield. Outside of that, it's all just purely sales technique to sell it to investors who are new in the industry or to the overseas foreign investors, selling the location, essentially, and how good the building is, how good the developer is, blah, blah. But the reality is there's nothing good about them, except you may, if you're lucky, end up getting a good rent yield. That's all.
Yeah, and you know, like what you pointed out about the developers as well, Sydney, you know, the oh my god, the Opal Tower incident. I think everyone is well aware of that. Also the Mascot Tower incident, you know, the building cracks, and I think Melbourne had a couple incidents as well. So hopefully that's brought some awareness to, you know, to people, especially investors who were thinking about them and started to make some awareness about how these building qualities were really not the top-notch type of quality, even though, you know, after a coat of paint finishes, you probably can't tell, to be honest. Yeah. You know, they can do as much cosmetic as they like to cover it up, but in a couple of years' time, and we're talking about just within 10 years, you know, and we're not even, I mean, we don't even need to talk about 10 years, Opal Tower, the Mascot Tower, they're both under 5. So, you know, in these kind of incidents, it kind of shows how, you know, how unfortunate the craftsmanship hasn't been done to the top quality. So, you know, as such, you definitely, if you are buying, obviously, would, you know, there's nothing for me and Jazz to be able to stop you from investing in high density property. But by all means, if you can steer away from it. If you are going to buy one, then definitely make sure that you do all your due diligence in terms of the developer, the builder. You know, obviously, there's very big differences between the good ones and the bad ones, or a lot of ones which just done one development and then disappear. I think those are the most common stories that I've heard. The one-timers.
Check out the growth that they have seen over the last 10, 20, 30 years, and that will pretty much answer it all. And I can pretty much guarantee that 99.9% of the times, hands down, the apartment building will lose in terms of the capital growth compared to any other investment, not in the mining town, as long as the basic fundamentals add up.
Some people might want to buy for their own living, which is a complete separate story again. But, you know, the same principle would apply, right? You still want to do all your due diligence to make sure that the developer, the furnishings are being done well to avoid the disastrous incident of the Opal Tower and the Mascot Tower alike.
To our listeners, hope you guys are enjoying the content. Thanks for all the feedback. We really do appreciate it, and we're trying to cover as much topics as we can. Also, don't forget to drop us a rating on iTunes or Podbean, whatever app you're using. Cheers, Jazz and David. Bye.
Bye. If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.